Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is presented by Kroger. More ways to save: fresh food, low prices at Kroger.
Presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, coming up in just a couple of minutes, I was just like many of you. My heart skipped a beat last night when I read the news about Georgia quarterback Dwan Mathis and kind of what he's gone through. Mike Griffith had some really good reporting on what at least has the potential whiff of being a little bit of a scary story. We'll deal with the Mathis stuff coming up in just a moment. It sounds like everything's going to be okay there, so we're going to push that back at least for a couple of minutes and deal with some more, you know, kind of football stuff on the field. But we will address the Mathis situation in large measure coming up here in just a couple of minutes on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger today. It's great to have you with us. Let me start, as I said, with kind of an on-field topic here for a moment, because one of the things that we have done a good bit is reflect the national conversation about Georgia. That Georgia right now is in that spot, tucked in at the number three team in the country, behind the Alabamas, behind the Clemsons. That's kind of where Georgia is right now. And the big question that we ask here all the time is, what's it going to take for Georgia to get over that hump? And when we talk to national writers, we had Mitch Light on yesterday from Athlon Sports, had Bill Bender on the day before that from the Sporting News. You know that from time to time I like to go outside the bubble of Dog Nation, talk to folks who cover all the teams, don't necessarily have a vested interest in Georgia, either professionally or just from a fan's perspective. They see Georgia more from a 10,000-foot view. I like asking them, what's it going to take to get Georgia over the hump? And you may remember, we mentioned this yesterday, that there is a lot of narrative about Georgia that's kind of all sort of in that intangible realm, that when you have Alabama on the ropes, you got to beat them. You got to finish that game. You got to do that in the fourth quarter. And as I said yesterday, there's almost a way of listening to some of that that makes it sound like, ooh, are they saying that Georgia has choked away the SEC championship this past year or the national championship game back in 2017? And maybe choke's too strong of a word to use. You can decide that for yourself. But the one thing's for sure, it's more about the intangible part of, hey, you got to finish the drill, to use the old Mark Richt phrase. You got to get it done in the fourth quarter. I am of the belief, though, that the issues facing Georgia against Alabama, who it almost for sure will play in December, and against Clemson, who it could play in January or at least late December, I am of the belief that these things are more tangible than intangible. And when Kirby Smart spoke to reporters on Wednesday, or one day this week, I forget when it was, it was in Macon as a part of the Touchdown Club deal they had down there, as you know, Kirby and the team kind of went through, and Tom Crean was there, others, they kind of went through the state a little bit this week. When he was in Macon, he met with reporters, and he addressed this very subject. What's it going to take to get over the Alabama, the Clemson hump? What's that going to take? And here's what Kirby had to say about that.
You talk about a hump, you think about the little things that you can do better, the details, whether it's turnover, create turnovers. There's so many statistics that we can improve in that it's hard to pinpoint just one thing. I'm certainly excited about this team. I'm excited about the guys we got coming back. I love their work ethic. I love the spring we had, and I'm just excited to be able to coach them.
So what Kirby Smart says, there's so many statistics we can improve upon. Now, listen, he's a little tight-lipped there. He's not exactly looking to, you know, give a whole lot of credence to the fact that they did not get the job done a year ago. And I guess to a certain extent, that's understandable. But when he uses a word like statistics, I take that to mean that Kirby's looking at tangible ways that he can improve this team, as opposed to just the intangible ways of, hey, late in the fourth quarter, you got to believe in yourself. You got to get it done. I don't think that's the way that Kirby views this. I think he views this more in the tangible realm. And I think from that standpoint, Kirby's probably got the correct overall viewpoint on this. There are a few things that Georgia can work on and has been working on during the spring, will continue to work on during the summer, and put together over the course of the 2019 season that will make not only it easier to hold on to a lead against Alabama in the fourth quarter, maybe play and beat Clemson in the college football playoff, but be able to maybe do so in more decisive fashion so that they're not sweat jobs there late in the game. I think there are really three areas in which Georgia either needs to maintain what it has had or improve upon what it did have. And I think if those three areas can be kind of cleaned up and cleared up, then all of a sudden we're talking about fourth quarter leads against teams like Alabama. They're a lot easier to hold on to. One of those is the wide receiver position. Now, part of this is based on the fact that Georgia lost a lot of productivity off last year's unit. And when you look towards 2019, is Georgia a national championship team? Is it as good as Alabama and Clemson? Is it capable of beating both of these teams? I think the wide receiver position factors in very significantly in this discussion. Now, as luck would have it, when Kirby was also meeting with these folks on Wednesday, he talked about one of the names that could factor into this. Now, quick caveat to all of this, Macon is in Middle Georgia. So a lot of the questions that Kirby Smart was asked had kind of a Middle Georgia flair to them, including Kiaris Jackson from Peach County. But Kiaris is relevant to people outside that Middle Georgia area because there is a lot of speculation of former elite recruit. How does he fit into that competition? And it includes guys like Demetrius Robertson, includes the newcomers like Cager and Pickens and Blaylock. Well, Kiaris has got a say in all this as well. And so if wide receiver is one of those needed areas to get Georgia over the hump against teams like Alabama and Clemson, is Kiaris Jackson a factor in that discussion? Well, Kirby was a little more candid on this topic. Here's what he said.
Well, Kiaris is still developing. I think that, you know, you really hadn't seen the best of Kiaris. He was a kid that we came really close to playing, played a little bit last year, and thought he could have helped last year, but it was one of our deeper positions. I mean, we had seniors who didn't play a lot last year, Jason Stanley and Akil Crumpton. So we thought it would be beneficial for Kiaris to get that time and experience to grow, and he's been able to do that. He had a good spring. He could have an even better fall, and he can grow into the player we need him to be. He's physical. He's tough. He's competitive. He helps a lot on special teams. We think he might be able to win the returning job, so he's in competition for a lot of that.
Two quick things. I think the idea of Kiaris Jackson as a returner, I think, is a very interesting thing to think about. Also, as far as the competition goes at wide receiver, it is worth pointing out, for as much as this means anything, back on G-Day, had Demetrius Robertson been healthy enough to play, he was going to be the, I guess, slot receiver with that red team, which was thought to be the first team offense. Once he was ill and not playing, Kiaris Jackson moved over in that spot. So that's maybe a little bit of a glimpse into how Jackson fits in to the competition for playing time at the receiver position right now. But one way or another, receiver, which Kiaris Jackson is a part of that group, that's one of those issues facing Georgia as it tries to get over the hump against Alabama and Clemson. Another one of those is defensive line. And we have talked a bunch about defensive line, and Georgia fans, when they get together, whether it be around the water cooler or the picnic table this weekend, whatever, when they're talking Georgia football, the defensive line is going to come up in that discussion. And one of the guys that I've had high hopes for being a part of that and doing big things will be his third year for Georgia in 2019 is Malik Herring, another one of these Middle Georgia guys. And with Kirby in Middle Georgia this week, Kirby was asked about Malik Herring, and defensive line is a big issue for Georgia. And how does Herring fit into all that? And once again, Kirby's actually pretty candid on what Herring has done and what he needs to do a little more of. Here's Kirby on the topic of a defensive lineman looking for more playing time.
You know, here's a kid that's kind of gotten better since he got here. He had a really good game against Georgia Tech, and everybody kind of remembers him by Georgia Tech. Well, that's a unique offense that fit his skill set really well. And I think he's growing. He's getting a little tougher. He's learning how to play the game and play more snaps because he's really been a role player up to this time. And he potentially now becomes a guy in the rotation to play more.
I mean, there's no doubt to me, and you can hear this sometimes in Kirby's tone, that certain challenges are going out to certain players. I think that Herring is one of those players who's being pushed and challenged right now. There's audio we've played back during spring practice that probably emphasizes that point even more. But this is a super athletic guy, and in this pursuit of really athletic defensive linemen to go on next to the big space eaters like Jordan Davis, Herring is one of your guys that you hope does a lot more of that. You hear Kirby say, don't read too much into a dominant game against Georgia Tech. It is, after all, just Georgia Tech. Don't read too much into that, but maybe we can push and prod him a lot more this summer, and maybe he does a lot more of that against other opponents, more substantial games for Georgia in 2019. One way or another, you're thinking about getting over the hump against Alabama and Clemson. You're thinking about the defensive line being one of the crucial areas there. That's an all-hands-on-deck situation. Newcomers coming in this summer, guys blossoming in their third year, you need them all, and Malik Herring is one of those, and it was interesting to hear Kirby Smart talk about them, or him, this past week. One more topic on this same subject, getting over the hump against Alabama and Clemson. Me, this is more of a tangible thing measured by statistics than an intangible thing measured by, you know, results of did you win or did you lose. This is about specific incremental statistical improvement, and one of those areas in which we know Georgia needs more of is in the pass rush situation. Now, we think about pass rush, sometimes we have a tendency to probably overemphasize the guys who've just arrived on campus. We saw some pretty interesting things from Nolan Smith this spring. We saw some pretty interesting things from a guy like Jermaine Johnson also this spring. When we think about more sacks, we think about guys like that. But there is another guy from the 2018 class that's also, at least compared to the 2019 signees, maybe flying under the radar just a bit. I'm talking about Azeez Ojulari. Dealt with an injury last year. We saw some interesting play from him in the Sugar Bowl, and that whets the appetite of a lot of fans about how Ojulari might factor into the improved pass rush necessary to beat teams like Alabama and Clemson. And once again, Kirby was pretty interesting and outspoken when he discussed Ojulari this week. Here's Kirby again.
Yeah, Azeez is a great kid, hardworking, never complains, tough. I mean, everything you want in a teammate. Does what he's supposed to do on and off the field. And, you know, he kept getting better, and it really just showed in the bowl practices that here this kid is. He's beating some guys in pass rush. He's getting better. And so we've got to play. He's got to go play in the game and help us. And he missed a sack in the game. He got a lot of reps. And I think those reps are going to give him quality confidence that I can go out and perform in the games next year, almost like he played last year when he really didn't. So I'm excited about where he's at. He's really gaining strength in the weight room. You've got to remember, he's coming off an ACL too, that sometimes you're not as good the first year back as you are the second.
So listen, here's the overall bottom line in this discussion for me. When it comes to, as Kirby mentioned off the top of our discussion here, getting over the hump versus Alabama and Clemson, this is about three things. It's about replacing the wide receivers you lost from last season and building on that. Hearing Kirby talk about Kyaris Jackson was interesting in that regard. It's about improving the situation on the defensive line. Georgia was not great last year when it comes to stopping the run. I'd love to see Malik Herring have a role and play a factor in improving that this year. And it's big time about finding more sacks, more tackles for loss, the so-called havoc plays that dominated the discussion during the spring. It sounds like Azeez Ojulari will be heard from in that front. And this idea that in all the preseason magazines and all the online national websites, Georgia number three in the distance beyond and past and below teams like Alabama and Clemson, by the time December rolls around, if those three areas see the improvement that I think are possible, that doesn't have to be true. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Kroger, and glad to have you with us live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, on the radio at noon. Once again, on the Classic City and Athens Sports Radio, 960 The Rep, and available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. We will get Jeff Sintel coming up in just a moment. I'll also announce the winner of our Dog Nation Days of Summer VIP giveaway courtesy of Callaway Resort and Gardens here in a moment as well. Let me, before that, remind you that everything today is brought to you by our friends at Kroger. And Kroger's got a great deal for you. You can get 4 days of digital deals, which begins today. So you got to get going here for, you're having a barbecue or a cookout, something like that this week. Kroger, the place to go to get stocked up on all that, things like Keebler cookies, ice cream sandwich bars, smoked sausage, charcoal, so much more. So the coupons can be downloaded right now. The savings also begin today, and they run through Monday. So the actual Memorial Day holiday, they run through Monday. So get over to your Kroger and get stocked up on everything you need for a great, great Memorial Day weekend. All right, speaking of great summer weekends, Memorial Day is obviously one, but we're also heading towards some others when it comes to our Dog Nation Days of Summer. And many of you are going to DogNation.com. You're finding the link for Dog Nation Days of Summer. You're getting registered to be a part of what we're doing either June 13th at Callaway Resort and Gardens or August 1st at a Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, and that's great. We also wanted to do even a step further than that. Courtesy of our friends at Callaway Resort and Gardens, we wanted to give away one of these trips, too. And I'm really proud to say today we get a chance to announce the winner of this. How exciting is this? Let me unveil and congratulate James Young on being the winner of our Dog Nation Days of Summer winner. Congratulations to you, James. You are the winner of the Dog Nation Days of Summer giveaway, courtesy of Callaway Resort and Gardens. And we'll look forward to seeing you on Thursday, June 13th, right there at the beautiful resort that is Callaway Resort and Gardens. This is just going to be an incredible time. And I know many of you are going to want to join James there. Please go to DogNation.com to find more details about that as we really get ready for what's going to be just a great, great summer. Dog Nation Days of Summer. Can't wait to see you all there. All right, before Jeff Sintel, it's time now to go around the doghouse. It's brought to you today by Meriwether and Tharp. And I want to kind of get into a more serious situation here. When I read the story last night at DogNation.com, I was frankly just a little bit panicked. It was really a harrowing situation as Georgia quarterback Dwan Mathis in Athens on Thursday undergoes brain surgery to remove a cyst. Now, good reporting from Mike Griffith, he was able to talk to Dwan's father, Terrence Mathis, and there's better news about the scenario when it comes to what Terrence said here. I want you to read the whole story at DogNation.com because there are more details. Let me give you the quote from Terrence here, though. He says, "I want everyone to know my son is okay and will be back and better than ever because of Coach Kirby Smart and the University of Georgia medical staff and coaching staff. The procedure today was a success, and that's the best news of all. And I want to thank Coach Smart and Georgia for the way they treated my son and my family. Coach Coley's at the hospital with my son right now, in fact. And, boy, if your dad in Michigan, your son's in Georgia, and he's dealing with a situation like this, I mean, really, the coaching staff almost becomes like de facto parents in a situation like that. And it's incredibly serious. And, listen, around here on this show, we talk about injuries all the time. But there's always something different when the tone changes from injury to health, about more than just on-field stuff, about the actual health and the ability to live life the way that you want to live it in a comfortable way. And this story obviously kind of veers more in the health range than just the injury range. And so it's obviously scary, and it's infinitely more scary if you're a part of the Mathis family here. But there is really quality health care in the Athens area. The Georgia staff is obviously really plugged in what's best for its players. And there's obviously a close connection between these coaches and players. And it sounds like Mr. Mathis revealing some good news there. And that's a real sigh of relief for Georgia fans, because when you hear any kind of surgery, especially when it's something you didn't know about, there's that immediate just kind of, I don't know, just a real level of anxiety about that. But Mr. Mathis does a good job of making Dog fans feel better about that. I know that UGA fans are going to continue to keep Mathis in your thoughts and prayers, and obviously send out some well wishes there in kind of whatever way that you can, because this is a really impressive young man. And I think that he's got a really bright future on the football field. And this is obviously a little bit bigger than that for right now. But all of this seems to be heading in the right direction, which is, that's a real answered prayer very, very quickly right there. So good stuff. It's Around the Doghouse presented by Merriweather and Tharp. And listen, Merriweather and Tharp are experts when it comes to dealing with divorce. And the divorce process can be scary and confusing. If you're going through that, you know that. You never thought it would be you, but now it is. And you've got a lot of questions. And a lot of these center around your family's future. Well, listen, Merriweather and Tharp believes that you should not have to go through this alone. It may be your first divorce, but for Merriweather and Tharp, they've been through thousands of these, and their experience is going to be your ally. They can guide you through the chaos. They can give you some options and some strategies and recommendations about how to make the best decision for you. Here's the good news. I know it seems impossible now, but you can feel normal again, and you will feel normal again, but you need expert guidance to get you through it. So please do yourself a very important favor. Go to this website, theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. If you're in a tough situation when it comes to a divorce, you need Merriweather and Tharp on your side, theatlantadivorceteam.com. We're busy today. It's Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. We got a lot more to do. For now, though, let's talk some recruiting. Let's talk to Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will say hello to Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. And there's a lot of recruiting stuff that I want to get to and deal with. But Jeff, here on this Friday, I don't know how much you had a chance to hear before. We talked a little bit about the Dwan Mathis thing, which I know that you know a lot about. I think a very good quote to hear from Terrence Mathis, Dwan's father, based on the reporting from Mike Griffith at DogNation.com. And I love hearing Mr. Mathis say that the surgery was a success and this is going to all apparently work out well. But my gosh, Jeff, when you first hear about this, how scary is this news?
Yeah, first of all, Dog Nation, there are moments even in our busy lives and times where things that just pop up that shed a tremendous amount of perspective on this world. I mean, on this life. I mean, is he going to be the backup? How big is he? Is he the dual threat? Everybody's still rewinding that double reverse catch he hauled in from Matt Landers. A lot of things here. But then when you hear the words brain surgery, and some people on social media even have kind of astutely pointed out that there's no such thing in their minds as minor brain surgery. There's just brain surgery. And that, for me, folks, when you kind of cover these kids and these young men, and everybody wonders about projections and how's he going to look, how much is he picking up the offense, the most important thing for anybody in this life is his health, and it's our health, and it's great to hear that Dwan Mathis has a very positive outlook here.
And I'll give a little bit of context, and I won't pretend to know the specifics of Mathis' situation, and no one should take what I'm about to say that I have any idea about his specific situation, because medically all these things are different, and I'm no medical expert. But my son also had cysts on his – we didn't call them his brain, we called them his head – and when he was like a baby, he had to have surgery to have them removed as well. And the way that it worked, Jeff, is that my son's cysts were growing, I guess, inward, as opposed to like growing outward so you could see them on the skin. They were growing inward, and eventually they would have disappeared. But as they continue to grow inward, they do, I guess, run the risk of, I don't want to say penetrating the brain, but kind of heading in that direction. So the doctor said, we got to have these, you know, removed and taken care of, quickly. It was a very rare situation. It's not something that happens very much. But it also, and this is where the context for Mathis potentially comes in, anytime you're doing surgery around there, because it is the brain, it's a neurosurgeon that's going to do the surgery. And so for my son, even though it's kind of weird to have a baby being operated on, or at least someone close to a baby, you put him in there, you did the surgery, and it was all kind of by the book, and they were never too nervous about the procedure or anything like that. But as a parent, when you're at a neurosurgeon's office talking about, you know, surgery in and near your son's brain, it's kind of a freaky situation. But from a medical standpoint, you know, at least the doctors treated it as if there wasn't a ton of risk associated with it. So I don't know how that, you know, compares or contrasts to what's going on with Mathis here, but I do know just how kind of freaky it is to, you know, hear a word like neurosurgeon when it comes to your own son. And I can only imagine what Mr. Mathis and his family up there in Michigan, which suddenly seems, you know, pretty far away, I can only imagine what they must be dealing with when they start having all this kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, but I didn't even know that, but it's scary. I think it's funny how most young parents can point to some surgery that they have with their children. I think I've got a pretty large group of people I interact with, and it seems like maybe 20 or 30% of folks with kids and multiple kids, they have some sort of surgery with the young ones, and people go like, oh, well, they're so young now. It's fine. It won't be a problem. Their healing is great or something like that. So with the specific nature of this story, it was interesting how our Mike Griffith reported that it had something to do with the southern climate and always having constant headaches. So that's something, obviously, there was a lot of effusive praise on the Mathis family for how the Georgia football family, that's Ron Corson, the team doctors, Kirby Smart, and the coaches, were really proactive in getting Dwan taken care of here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So our prayers will continue to be out for Mathis for a speedy recovery and his family as they kind of navigate what for them is probably a pretty harrowing situation. We'll continue to do that. Let me kind of shift gears without a clutch, Jeff, and here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, let me kind of get back more to our traditional topic, which is recruiting. And this is a kind of a fun, happy year subject, obviously, but you know, that chatter that Georgia fans are kind of pushing you on right now, and some of this is through your Twitter feed, some of this is through the forum at forum.dognation.com, the notion that five-star quarterback Kelee Ringo is, to use a phrase you've used before, the most committed, uncommitted prospect in the country. You can see there on our video screen some examples of why some folks feel that way for some of the things that Ringo has said and what some of the people have said to you about this. You can kind of see that there. Jeff, it is kind of interesting for me that the class of 2020 for Georgia, at least some of the guys at the top, and I'm thinking about MJ Sherman here probably more than anybody else, they don't play it all that coy, do they? And maybe this is wishful thinking for me on Ringo's part, but they don't do a lot of work to kind of hide the way they feel about Georgia. And I guess it doesn't really come across like they're trying to troll the Georgia fan base, because it's fairly consistent. You don't really see this in some respects for some of those other teams. I mean, what do you make about the fact that Ringo is pretty open about his relationship with Georgia right now?
Well, Brandon, I think it's different. I think maybe most people over the age of 25, they might look at Twitter or Instagram as some sort of newswire, like the old school AP newswire, and there's wire stories popping up. Kelee Ringo says this, yada, yada, yada. These guys, they don't view it as, oh, I'm not letting anything out of the bag, or I'm not, sharing any insider trading or any insider secrets here. All it is guys flipping messages back and forth and saying things on Instagram or saying things on Twitter. I don't think national letters of intent or commitment boards traffic in what's kind of said in the currency of the language across the social media, that online chatter you're talking about. Uh-huh. I think I think chatter's there for a reason, and I think what it is, you know, there was an interesting study, not to get too deep in the woods here, but there was an academic that looked at Twitter patterns for big-time high school recruits. Someone did a paper on this. I remember we had a forum thread on this in our Dog Nation forum, where they predicted eventual commitment decisions based on the frequency of positive interactions. That's likes, that's pictures, that's retweets, yada, 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 based on said prospect from the kind of home-generating Twitter account. And you can just kind of tell that, you know, the moves they make on social media sometimes foresee the moves they're going to make in real life. So I think maybe that's just guys getting cozy with everything. With Ringo, I do think it's not going to be anytime soon. Like, soon in Brandon Adams' terms will be before he gets the hot dogs on the grill on Monday. But maybe soon in the world of recruiting might even be 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or whatever. Texas is still very large. I've thought there for Ringo, no matter what the emojis on Instagram or Twitter say. And I don't think most people realize, you know, for instance, with Texas, one of their guys, Tim Beck, in that program, used to be the head coach of the high school where Keely Ringo attends. And then, you got a big one for you here now, former Texas Longhorn great Bryant Westbrook, who played at Texas, went on to the NFL, played for the Detroit Lions, and I think a couple of other teams. He's also an assistant coach at that high school for Saguaro High School in Arizona. So the very fact that, you know, Georgia and Texas are here in the ring doing rock'em sock'em robots here for Mr. Ringo is in of itself a pretty momentous feat.
So let me ask you two questions about this before we move on. And you're right, I didn't realize the Bryant Westbrook connection there. That's actually a really interesting thing to be able to learn. And yet, and this may sound like an overly optimistic appraisal from a Georgia fan, but I'm going to say this nonetheless. You know, Georgia has the reigning Thorpe Award winner right now. I think this Georgia secondary this year sets up to be really good. I think Eric Stokes, for instance, is way better than a lot of people around the country think that he is. And I think that Tyreek Stevenson's a prospect. I think that Tyson Campbell's going to be heard from in a big way this year. I think that Georgia, but Kirby Smart's not just a defensive-minded head coach, but a defensive backs-minded head coach. I think this is quickly starting to look like the place to be for defensive backs. That's got to help Georgia in this side-by-side comparison with Texas, the connection to the former Longhorn notwithstanding, right?
It does. And, I mean, I think a lot of people forget the name Mark Webb Jr. a lot when they're talking about Georgia and corners. Devon Wilson will also be kind of the ideal star candidate. I still contend that he might have been starting alongside Tyson Campbell in some of those early games had he not suffered that early injury during spring practice. He was looking that adept at what he does. But, you know, the other things to think about there is I think maybe the coaching staff and Kirby Smart, you listen to what they say in the preseason, and it's probably what they don't say that kind of leads them the genesis of what they're trying to say. What I mean there is when Kirby Smart says he wants to create more havoc, he wants to create more sacks or whatever, you understand baseline nature of football, you don't try to roll the dice with your front seven unless you feel really good about your back four, your back five. And finally, this is Georgia. To me, I saw that as an outward reflection of Georgia, feeling really good about those names we've all went through, Stokes, Campbell, J.R. Reed, Richard LeCount, even guys like Mark Webb, Tyreek Stevenson. You know, they feel good about that back end core. Let's not forget Chris Smith, Tyreek McGee, who's still in the mix in the program. He seems like he's a 9-year veteran at this point. We've been learning and watching McGee play for so long. It's a lot of depth there, Brandon. And then you add in a guy like Lewis Seen, Otis Reese. Georgia feels pretty sporty about its back end. And that's why it says, all right, let's turn up the dials on the stove eye about bringing heat on the quarterback.
Well, let me also add this, Jeff. You talk about havoc plays. One of the things I think people can quickly forget, because we always mention tackles for loss and sacks in that havoc conversation, PBU's pass breakups are a havoc play. So when you're talking about the need to have as many havoc plays as possible, pass breakups are a big part of that. And, Jeff, I love the stat blogs and things like that. I'm going to tell you that pass breakups are also a pretty predictive stat in both college and the NFL. And terms of how overall successful a team ends up being. So one of the reasons why I love stocking up on defensive backs is because knocking balls out of the air is actually one of the key components to winning, and there's about 1,000 different studies that'll back that up.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things, like a simple tip ball at the line that is considered a havoc play because it affects, you know, you look about PBUs, passes broken up. And the other thing to think about this is if Georgia has maybe the lockdown guys on each island out there, well, then that forces the quarterback to go to a different read, forces him to go to maybe one of his less dangerous receivers, forces him to maybe take a check down, and it also gives a little bit more time for that young man, that young Wolfpack rusher, Nolan Smith, Azeez Ojulari, Jermaine Johnson, Adam Anderson, gives them another half second to do their work on getting to the quarterback.
All right, let me shift gears. Let me talk about Kendall Milton for a moment because this is going to be the new name we talk about every single week, like a lot of these other guys throughout the years have been. And there was an interesting exchange on social media last week that I kind of got tagged in and kind of got a part of where Chris Milton, who is Kendall Milton's father, was talking to a Georgia fan saying, hey, what do we do to get Kendall Milton to come to UGA? And Mr. Milton says, put on a hell of a last visit for his official. And obviously to hear Chris Milton say that, Jeff, around the same time that the first of these official visits for Kendall Milton is on the books, Ohio State coming up here, does it benefit Georgia to get last shot, what I guess is going to be the last shot for Milton in September? Does it benefit Georgia to get that shot? Is that the right timing for UGA in this recruitment?
I think so. Maybe it's the online, you know, that's the official visit that Georgia would get a shot at. And it looks like, does this mean Georgia and Alabama get the game day officials? How long will he take it? I'm gonna say two things I want to make sure we get in this program, Brandon, that you'll probably be thinking about for the rest of the day when it comes to Georgia recruiting. Number one, there's no one. There's some chatter out there, the online chatter. Sometimes we got to debunk it instead of embellish it. There's some online chatter that Kendall Milton wants to make his decision made by the opening. That's why he's speeding up his timeline. My best information on this topic is that is not accurate. He does not want to have his decision made by the time of the opening. He does not want to have this thing figured out. He does not want to take his official visit to Georgia before the opening. Everybody that may be leaning into Georgia recruiting coverage here on Dog Nation Daily that doesn't know what the opening is, that's a national showcase of the top players in the country. They all congregate. It used to be at Nike headquarters in Oregon. It's no longer a Nike-affiliated or branded property. Jerry Jones, Student Sports, and the Dallas Cowboys owner now moved everything to the Star at the Dallas Cowboys World Practice Headquarters. Kendall Milton will be there with a lot of big Georgia targets and commitments, Jalen Kimber, Kendall Milton, Keely Ringo, guys like that, Tate Ratledge, those guys will all be there. And the other thing about social media chatter that I thought was particularly compelling is I know you probably spotted it on your radar over the last 36 hours, but you see Brian Brzee, everybody knows that name, now reaching out to Jordan Burks. That's that five-star interesting target for Georgia over the last two or three weeks. There's the graphics. There's the social media edits about Jordan Burks being the last piece of that five-star pyramid, let's say for Dabo, along the defensive line at Clemson. So here you go, Brandon. You have five-star Brandon Brzee recruiting for Clemson, trying to pull Jordan Burks, maybe away from the Gamecocks, maybe away from the Bulldogs, and keep him in-state as South Carolina's top prospect this year to join that stacked defensive line in Clemson. All right. I thought that was highly interesting for folks to be aware of today.
I'm glad you brought that up, and since you opened the door, I'm going to walk through it. So earlier, it was thought to be Georgia versus South Carolina for Burks, and I hate to be this way, but I sort of took that as after getting Murphy and Brzee, maybe Clemson didn't feel like it had room for the young man from Columbia. But now that Brzee's trying to, I guess, change that message and say, no, we do welcome you with open arms, is that going to change the way that Burks views Clemson?
Well, Clemson is Clemson. I mean, they are sitting high on the hog, so to speak, if let's act like we're sons of the South here. The defensive line pedigree, the guys they're reeling in, Murphy the five-star, Brzee the five-star, Trey Williams the near five-star, DeMonte Gaphart. I mean, that's just what they do at Clemson right now. And I think the pull there for Clemson will be strong as long as Jordan Burch maybe realizes that, okay, where were they 1 or 2 months ago? Is that, am I on again? Am I off again now with Clemson? I'm just going to make it very simple, Brandon. If Clemson has room for Jordan Burch and they want him in the program and they start firing those big program guns like a Brian Brzee, I think Jordan Burch will be highly interested in the Clemson Tigers. It would be hard to think that he would not.
So let me ask you this. Obviously, Georgia's gone to Columbia before and got Channing Tindall, and that was a pretty big deal when it happened. Getting George Pickens out of Hoover was a pretty big deal this past signing day. Sometimes it's a little weird to stand up in kind of enemy territory and announce you're leaving the hometown school or whatever. Is it going to be if Jordan Burch wants to tell the folks in Columbia that I'm going to Clemson, how's that going to go over? It seems like it'd be a little easier to go to Georgia than it would go to Clemson. Or is that just too much wishful thinking?
There you go, folks. There's Brandon's mind working right away, and he's already working out his end games and his vectors and his angles on everything like that. I think Jordan Burch is just going to be happiest where he feels a fit, where he feels like just that warmth, that X factor he feels about. I don't know if most young people I talk to don't sit there and dream about, okay, now let's look at Jordan Burch for instance. Well, Jordan Burch is a five-star defensive end that can play all over the defense, can play on the edge, can play inside, maybe a five, maybe a shade three technique there. But, okay, Miles Murphy, and then you've got Brian Brzee. Brian Brzee is now seen as a defensive tackle, but they will likely play him a little up and down the line as well. Maybe this might be a way, if you're looking for the angle or the play here, maybe this is a way where Georgia – and maybe what it doesn't have yet on the defensive line class in 2020 might be a benefit here. The other simple benefit here might be, Brandon, sometimes guys want to get away and go to school a little bit. Maybe flap their wings, get about a couple hours away from mom and dad and the family unit, just kind of feel like they're growing on their own as a young man there. That's another thing to think about with this recruitment as well.
That's a good point. Let me try to do two quick things kind of quickly here. I know I've kind of kept you long, but let me try to do a couple things quickly before we go. Obviously, tight end recruiting has been a hot topic. Rick Gilbert, probably the number one name that we should mention and will mention at the top of that list over and over. But two of the other guys, Theo Johnson, the Canadian, Darnell Washington from Las Vegas, they have both recently teased announcements, which I'm assuming are finalists, and we're kind of getting that time of year where a lot of these folks are going to be dropping their finalist list. Would you mind just kind of giving us a thumbnail sketch of the tight end situation? Is there still room for two of these guys? I'm assuming there's not room for all three. And in the Darnell Washington, Theo Johnson comparison, how does that work out for Georgia right now?
Well, an educated point I'll make here a little bit is I would probably say that Gilbert has to be, if there's anybody that is a mainstay or, you know, maybe is a, we're going to hold the spot until the very end, and maybe Gilbert's spot might transcend the third receiver. It might transcend an extra cornerback. It might transcend an extra linebacker. I think Gilbert has a spot in the class at Georgia as long as he wants it, whenever he wants it. What would get very interesting to me is a guy like Theo Johnson, because to me the gulf is not that wide, sir, between Gilbert, Washington, and Johnson. Mm-hmm. Johnson, now, guys, he is a – almost a 6'6" kid. He's almost right at 6 feet 6 inches. He runs a lot of receiver routes. He's more of that wide receiver with a body like the tight end. He's going to have phenomenal metrics in terms of standing broad jump, everything that you do in the opening combine testing. And he's also the number one player in Canada, and he does have a healthy interaction and a healthy appreciation with all things Georgia. Theo just released his top seven. I think teams like Iowa, Miami, Penn State, Ohio State, Georgia, they all populated that top seven. Remember, Theo Johnson has came to Georgia a couple of times, including G-Day. It'll be very interesting to see and watch him make his moves over the next couple of months about what he does with his officials and what he does with his timelines. Probably very shortly, you guys will see, kind of much like you saw with Cedric Von Prawn in a story about him right after he released his top eight. There was a story yesterday about where SVP factored into Georgia and where Georgia factored in with SVP. I thought it was highly interesting when I went back through his timeline of offers when he talked about Georgia being there since day one. I think that was very interesting that Georgia really was there since day one as his first SEC offer. And then when you bring it back to Theo Johnson, you have a situation here as well where we'll be able to provide you guys with a lot of Theo thoughts about Georgia and where his recruiting stands very shortly.
So just really quick follow-up on this. Is it fair to say that Darnell is almost like a big receiver, but Johnson's more of a traditional tight end? Is that a fair description for those two guys?
I think the fair description is that these guys are hybrid flex guys. I think, you know, we talk a lot, and a lot of people bring up the fact that they're hot zones for Jake Fromm and how, you know, he doesn't really work that middle of the field a lot. Well, maybe in his defense here a little bit, or maybe a little bit more another data point to this discussion here, is that maybe Georgia, it's been clear for the last two or three years of following recruiting, you hear tight ends, the athletic tight ends, they hear the Georgia coaches tell them that they don't have a kid that can put their foot in the ground and run away from guys, or at least create separation from athletic safeties and linebackers. And I think Washington, I think Johnson, and obviously Gilbert all kind of create that space, and it upgrades the tight end room at Georgia, where it's not just maybe some of the designated blockers or those guys in those A sets or three tight end sets where Georgia likes to lean on folks, but then they can also sneak out and catch a pass. I think Georgia's wanting to get in the business of seeing more completions to the tight end, but also more 25- and 35-yard completions to the tight end as well.
Real quick, and this is, I promise, the last thing. You mentioned Cedric Von Prawn from the New Orleans, the top eight reveal, Georgia in that group. Any other final thought from you on I like the nugget about Georgia being his first SEC offer. I do think that matters both ways. I think it makes Von Prawn feel a sense of loyalty to Georgia, but also shows that Georgia's really actually truly in the mix for this guy. Any other final thoughts you want to give us on Cedric Von Prawn?
Well, he's just like Georgia and felt a certain type of way about Georgia for a long time. Sam Pittman, these are his words. Pitt tells him often that he's his guy for the 2020 class. He's the nation's number three center, can also play some guard. Film looks great. His education level, his acumen for academics also checks out. He's a clear leadership type for the class. Even Lincoln Riley said that. It'd be very interesting because this guy, one of the things I really like about this kid is that he knows where to put recruiting on the shelf, and he knows that his recruiting will be there, especially amongst his top schools when he needs it. He's going to focus on his high school season. He's going to focus on putting a big trophy in that trophy case for Warren Easton in New Orleans once a certain time happens in the summer, and then he's going to just put blinders on to a lot of other things. He says don't expect him to take an official visit during the season. He might take an unofficial visit, but it would only when it wouldn't interfere with film study. I think LSU, I think Oklahoma, I think Georgia, I think those are schools to really watch here for Cedric Von Prawn.
Jeff, incredible stuff. It's a long interview, but we appreciate you giving us as much information as you did, both the planned and the unexpected. We hope you have a great Memorial Day weekend. We appreciate you being a part of our program. We appreciate the recruiting coverage you provide all day long here on at DogNation.com, and we'll look forward to speaking to you soon here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger.
Man, that was fast. All right, guys, have yourself a good weekend, and say a small prayer, everybody, for Dwan Mathis today. That's the right thing to do.
For sure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, at the end of that one there, some of y'all joke sometimes. You say I sound like an auctioneer, and I do have a tendency to talk way too fast. It's the one thing that I'm kind of always working on more than anything else is just trying to slam on the brakes when I speak and not talk so fast. But I kind of got into the whole spiel right there, and by the time I got to the Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, I really was probably going about 100 miles an hour. But really good stuff from Jeff Sintel. And on a serious note, this show, obviously Dog Nation Daily, we'll continue to send out prayers to Dwan Mathis. I think Terrence Mathis gave us a great update at DogNation.com, but that doesn't mean prayers aren't still needed, and we're going to pay very close attention to everything that's going on with that. Boy, really good recruiting information from Jeff Sintel. Great stuff on Ringo. About the stuff on Jordan Burch, I don't necessarily love it, but I'm always glad that Jeff gives it, even if it's the bad news or the potential of bad news. I like that from Jeff Sintel, so really good stuff. Let me do SEC Through right now, and there are a few stories here that I think are pretty interesting, and one of these we're going to deal with as part of our summer Q&A. First of all, and this starts off as a report, but I guess now it's official. Ross Bjork, the Ole Miss AD, is leaving Oxford to go to College Station. I think this is a very weird move, and I'll tell you why. I think that Ole Miss is a very different kind of SEC job than Texas A&M. Now, for those of us who like the drama in the league, the fact that LSU tabs the A&M AD and A&M tabs the Ole Miss AD, you have this musical chairs of athletic directors that obviously furthers that drama. We like that. But Ole Miss is a small school in a small state. There's a very small media presence in the state of Mississippi covering both Ole Miss and Mississippi State. And along the way, I think that is the word insular. Am I saying that right? The insular nature of Ole Miss and Mississippi State within the state of Mississippi, I think it's easy to get caught up in that. For instance, it's not been unusual to see Ross Bjork responding to, like, fans on Twitter. I mean, Mississippi State fans, you know, basically retorting back to them for something they may have said. These two schools, rivals in the SEC, have been at each other for a while, and when you're a small school in a small state, you can kind of get away with that. Nobody really cares. Texas A&M, College Station, may be a small town, but the state of Texas is gigantic, and there is a very big media presence around Texas A&M. Houston Chronicle covers the team on a regular basis. The local media there in College Station, that's big business. Covering A&M is big business. There's obviously huge money attached to Texas A&M. Now, the TV money for all the schools is essentially the same, but the donor money, the booster money for Texas A&M is much, much bigger. There's a bigger spotlight on Ross Bjork at Texas A&M than there's places like Ole Miss. Obviously, upward mobility is basically the rule for everybody in all their careers, and so if you get the A&M offer, you're supposed to take it. I wonder if Ross Bjork's going to like this quite as well. I think the jury is still very much out on that. I thought this was really odd. Alabama has scheduled a 2-for-1 with South Florida. Now, first of all, it's kind of weird to see Alabama playing a non-conference road game anyway. The fact they're going to go to Tampa and play against South Florida seems even weirder. But the bigger story, and I said this immediately upon hearing the news, and social media, the reaction's been the same for everybody else as well. This is a black eye for UCF. I mean, this is absolutely a total embarrassment for UCF, because South Carolina is willing to do and getting a chance to do something that, according to a lot of reports, UCF was not willing to do with Florida. Now, you may say, well, Alabama's a bigger program than Florida. If you get Alabama coming to your stadium, that's a bigger deal. From a ticket sold standpoint, I'm not quite so sure that UCF getting to host Florida once is going to be a bigger deal than South Florida getting to host Alabama once, given the fact it's going to be 9 Alabama fans for every 1 Bulls fan in the building there that day. UCF comes across looking really bad on this. They've been trying to work their way into, you know, kind of being the fourth team in the state of Florida, and in some cases truly being better than the three teams who are above it in terms of overall stature. Alabama's made an odd decision to go play a non-conference road game at South Florida. I don't know why they're doing this, but I know that it's not good for UCF, who's turned down some opportunities to have kind of the same thing. As a follow-up on a story that we've, I don't want to say reported on, because it's not really what we do, we've talked about. So Kelvin Joseph, the LSU defense back, former elite signee from the class of 2018, reportedly put his name in the transfer portal. Then Joseph's dad talked to NOLA.com saying, no, he's staying at LSU. We talked about both these stories this week here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. But Joseph has now responded back to the report about his dad saying, no, that's not true. I am entering the transfer portal. I don't know where this is going. I just think it's kind of weird this is playing out as public as it is. And for a guy like Joseph, listen, LSU is going to be deep whether Kelvin Joseph's on that roster or not. But when you think about, you know, a guy like this and how he compares to some of the other big names from that class, guys like Terrace Marshall as the receiver, I think that Marshall was the only signee from the class of 2018 who was rated higher as a player than Kelvin Joseph was. Holding on to him would be a pretty big deal. His dad says that's what's going to happen. Joseph says not. You know, I hope this is one, at least for LSU's sake, that the adults end up winning the argument here, because I think that's probably in Joseph's best interest. But we shall see. And then finally, Bud Elliott, who's been a guest on Dog Nation Daily before, recruiting expert from SB Nation, also Florida State fan, had a very interesting tweet. I don't know if we have the tweet from Bud Elliott or not, but what Elliott basically joked and said was, okay, good stuff. He says, what would you make the point spread for a UGA versus SEC East All-Star team? Elliott says, obviously not including UGA players. He reminds the non-Georgia fans that UGA has won every East game by double-digit points the last two seasons. I think that's a very interesting question, and it's one that we'll deal with coming up as a part of our summer Q&A here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. We'll make that your SEC through. And speaking of Kroger, time now for our Kroger kickoff. I already told you that you got a great opportunity to kick off your weekend at Kroger with four great days worth of savings on all the stuff that you need for cookouts and barbecues and parties, whatever else that you're doing this weekend. Kroger's got you covered on that. But when we think about kicking off the weekend, we also think about busy stuff going on with UGA athletics as well. So let's update that as part of our Kroger kickoff right now. Now, some of this stuff is, to me, pretty complicated. Some of these spring sports are hard to follow. UGA men's golf begins its NCAA championship run today. That is in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I think they'll get going this afternoon around, like, say, 3:30 or 4. Is it 2 p.m.? Okay, that's a little bit different than what I initially heard that it was going to be. But they're going to get going today, and then it's still Saturday morning they resume. It is stroke play right now, and then after that, once you get down to 8, you move on to match play, which is really, really fun. And starting on Monday, the Golf Channel will have coverage of this. The match play stuff for the NCAA is just a blast, but you got to advance there to get to that. Diamond Dogs do not play today. They won in the SEC tournament yesterday against Arkansas, another thrilling game. Diamond Dogs will go on Saturday in the SEC semifinals, which reverts back to a single elimination format, I believe, now. So it was double elimination yesterday. Georgia won in that round. It's back to single elimination now, and sometime today, Scott Strickland, the UGA baseball coach, will probably announce if it's Tony Losi or if it's Emerson Hancock that's going to pitch for Georgia in the semifinals on Saturday. Then you've got Katarina Jokic in the NCAA semifinals for women's tennis. This is the individual event. That's today. I believe it's 5 p.m. That's the tennis channel for that, if you've got access to that, and you get the track and field stuff going on all weekend as well. So it's really fun this time of year when it comes to the spring sports. It's actually really cool to see Georgia doing as well as it's doing. And depending on your, you know, video access this week, you get a chance to see a lot of that kind of stuff this weekend. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We'll make that your Kroger kickoff. And by the way, speaking of Kroger, one of the things I like about Kroger is the fact that that's where my family can go to get real dairy milk from Georgia cows. I like the real stuff. Frankly, a lot of this imitation milk, I don't think it's good for you, right? It's processed. It's got a lot of ingredients, and I don't want that stuff in my milk. I want real dairy milk from Georgia cows. That's what I want to build my children's bones and make their teeth stronger and all that kind of stuff that you've heard that milk's able to do for you. That's what I want for my family, and you know what? It tastes good when I mix it with my coffee and when I have the milkshakes on the porch, or my wife uses it for macaroni and cheese and things like that. There's just an endless array of ways in which real dairy milk makes your life better, and Kroger's support of local agriculture, including the Georgia dairy farmers, I think is an incredible thing. So please go to Kroger and get your real milk, because it's good for you and it tastes good and it's great for everything that you want to do. All right, so I mentioned before, we've been doing this now for the last few days. I have fun with this. Sometimes we try to get these involved in the regular show. On days like this, we're running just a little bit late, so we'll do this as part of our R.S. Andrews cool down in a couple of minutes, and for our radio and podcast audience, we'll take your answers on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. But here's kind of a fun summer Q&A for today, and we'll take these comments for you as much as you want to be a part of them. In fact, let's show the summer Q&A right now. Some of this related to some of the stuff that we've already talked about, including the Bud Elliott question about the SEC East All-Stars versus Georgia. Do you think Georgia by itself could beat the SEC East All-Stars? I think that's pretty funny. Something else that I thought was kind of funny, did you see the report from Michael Carvel at DogNation.com about Matthew Stafford? Oh, I'm sorry, that was Connor Riley that did that. I apologize. I didn't give my boy Connor credit. I'm sorry. Matthew Stafford chugs the beer in kind of a shot at Aaron Rodgers, who kind of failed to do the same thing during the Raptors and Bucks game. Do you have a hidden talent? Because Matthew Stafford apparently does. I thought that was good stuff. You can kind of weigh in on that. And then let us know about your Memorial Day weekend plans as well. We would love to hear about all of those as we get ready to wrap up the program today here on Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, as we do that, something else I'm going to remind you to make sure you check out are our friends at AJC.com. You may have seen the story the other day about Robert Smith, the billionaire who goes to Morehouse and basically does a very generous act of taking care of the student loan debt for all of the class of 2019. There was a very detailed report at AJC.com yesterday about how the actual process of getting this money to pay off the loans is going to be a lot more complicated than maybe a lot of folks initially thought. This was really, I thought, a very interesting report. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. It's just an example of one of the things you get every single day at AJC.com. So check it out through the day. Get your Atlanta news now at AJC.com. Also some fun stuff to get ready for Memorial Day weekend there as well. Hope you'll check that out. Something else I hope you'll love is the fact that it's now been 937 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. It's our Gator Hater Updater right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.